cordially welcome you to my podcast, New Music Lady. I have studied classical voice and singing, and I love to sing lots of contemporary experimental music and performance. And if you would like to know more about me, please look at my website, www.irenekurk.de, and I put this for you into the show notes. And you're more than welcome to subscribe to my monthly newsletter, where you're informed about anything I do, whether it is singing, the podcasting, my writing, my teaching, my coaching, whatever it is. In this podcast, I talk about themes all around contemporary music. I share with you insider knowledge behind the scenes, and I bring you the human beings out of this new music world or related things closer and closer and closer. I'm cooperating with the NMZ, Neue Musikzeitung. And well, when I'm recording this, I'm just moving through very exciting times because I have some concerts in Poland and Romania I'm really, really excited about. So right now I'm in the preparation for a film opera by Leah Muir. And this is so, so, so exciting. And today I'm also gonna talk with Leah about this piece, this production we have been working on for months. This is probably, at least for me, one of the biggest projects I have ever done, because it's a film and live performance. And obviously, to get everything done until the 23rd of November, where we perform this piece, Embodiment, at Rainy Day Festivals Luxembourg at 11:30, so shortly before noon, with Film and me, we really had to prepare everything very early. So we started early filming. She filmed me. I drove a few times to Berlin. And then, you know, she put the film together. There is also Michael Weilacher in this film. He's a percussion player. Then, obviously, she also composed the music. She's doing everything on her own. She's like a multi-talented artist for me. And yeah, and now we're putting everything together. The music, the staging, the directing, the film. And it's amazing and it's a lot of work. And in all of this, I have interviewed Leah Muir, and I'm very, very happy to talk with her. And it is also so pleasant, because when we had our talk, I realized that we know each other probably over 10 years now. And we also talk about this in this interview, that some things need time and need development and need a really trustful relationship to get to this point, and all also the certain things we do in this production. So enjoy the interview with Leah Muir.
Hello, Leah. I cordially welcome you into my podcast today.
Thank you, Irena. Thank you so much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be interviewed by you again, and this time in English.
Yes, I know. You have been on my podcast before, and we will talk about our collaboration as well, because we have been knowing each other, I think, about or over a little bit over 10 years now. And this podcast, we're also going to talk about piece we're going to premiere at Rainy Days Festival in Luxembourg. And we definitely will talk about that. But first, we have to figure out or hear how you got started. So how did you find your way into this new and experimental music?
That is a great question. How did I find my way? This is a very special field. I started studying a violin when I was a young child, and then I started afterward with the piano a little bit later, around age 10 or 11. And I then started to compose music immediately after having some bouts of stage fright. And I, so around 14, 15, I was in, I enrolled in a program at Bennington College where I could study with Alan Shaun. He's actually the brother of actor Wallace Shaun, who's famous for, above all, The Princess Bride being one of the main characters in The Princess Bride. So Alan has a, and he wrote a really great book on Schoenberg. So Alan has a fairly big presence in the United States. And I started with him, and then I decided to start studying the humanities. And I went, when I was age 18, I went and I, into a totally different field and studied the humanities for a couple of years, but then I missed music, composing, and mathematics. So I started then to go to a different college, at Bennington College, back to Bennington. And I studied with Steven Siegel, who was a student of Elliot Carter. And he taught me everything he had learned at Juilliard and from Persichetti, and especially counterpoint in the style of the 16th century counterpoint. And so I learned at a very good basis with Steven. And he was a very, very close mentor, an unbelievable mentor. And so really, after that, I it sort of set the stage for me to go on, even though I really was also interested in mathematics and physics and had studied dynamic systems theory and upper level mathematics as well. And so I went then to study at the University of Missouri, Kansas City with Chen Yi and Jim Moberly, who were great people. I received an ASCAP award, a national award, and then I received a huge fellowship to get my PhD at the University of Buffalo, where I studied with David Felder and Cort Lippe. And then after that, I came to Europe. I received a Fulbright. I went to Vienna. I studied with Haya and the University of Music and Performing Arts in Vienna, Haya Chernovin. And that was an amazing experience. And then after that, I couldn't help just staying in Europe, and I came to Berlin, and I then went to the University of Arts for my Meisterschule, and I got my start in Europe really from Haya, and then Elena is so incredibly supportive of me. So but I've always been interested in experimental music, because I had in a lot of ways opportunities to do more conservative music in the United States. I was offered a position at Juilliard, which I declined. I wanted to go to Buffalo, where Feldman was, and I started a group where we interpreted graphic scores with the help of some of my colleagues at the university, including Carter Williams, and I had
and Aaron Cassidy.
Yeah, and Aaron Cassidy
and
as well.
We saw each other all in Berlin at some point. That was fun.
Yeah, yeah. And we had this ensemble dedicated to graphic score. So I've had always sort of a wonderful appreciation for experimental music and the visual arts. And so I think it makes a lot of sense that I've gone more in a visual direction now. And yeah, and that's sort of founds a basis for my experimentalism. Yeah, of course, my training at Bennington College and influence from Bennington with all of the visual arts there is also a part of the background that has influenced me greatly to start going into the field of film as well.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting now to talk to you, even though, as I mentioned, we know each other for about 10 years, and I thought, I know a lot about you, but already in this question, you said things I didn't know. and what I found very fascinating is that you are so wide talented, and I mean, we talk about this later, that this you also bring this in now in your work, and it's fascinating because I didn't know that I was also good in math. Mm-hmm. But I decided to study music. Mm-hmm. My sister studied math and physics, actually. And I think we both had the talent from our parents with music and math. but
That's
we
interesting.
choose different paths. And so I know, okay, she also knows mathematics and physics quite well. And the other thing that also stuck me right now is when you said we had some stage fright, and that also motivated you to go toward composing. And about me, I was playing the piano with like 10 or 11, and I thought I could become a piano player. But the thing was, whenever I had to perform piano, because I was at this musical high school and we had to perform a lot, I had very shaky hands.
Yeah, exactly.
And
terribly
my
shaky.
Teacher was so amazed that I still would hit many correct pitches, because it's like, this is unbelievable. Your hands are really... But I noticed that the other pianists didn't have that problem. And so in my head, there was something, I don't think you should become a piano player because you're too nervous. And when I was singing, I always was singing, I never had that problem, particularly not something that really would have an influence on my voice. I sometimes would have whatever shaky knees, but my voice was clear. And that was also then the indication, you should become a singer. But I love piano music.
Well, it's amazing. You know, I could practice in private, obviously, and I would be completely okay. I'd get everything completely perfect and convinced that I could go on the stage. And something about the nerves and my particular nervous system would that just make that part of my body very unstable. When I go onto the stage to conduct, for instance, now I'm conducting with the Ensemble Illinx, which a group that I founded in 2015 with the Professor Elena Mendoza, and now I'm conducting a lot with them, and I'm performing in that way, and I don't shake at all. I'm totally grounded, and I stay in the moment and in the present, so I'm not even aware of any sort of nerves involved. And it's so amazing that certain parts of your body will just react or carry out this nervous energy that you have when you go onto a stage. And so, yeah, I was not meant to be a pianist, obviously.
And not a violin player either.
And not a violin player either, yes.
So
but I don't regret it.
No, I'm glad you became a composer, so I can come work with you and sing your great music. And so my next question is, what qualities do you most appreciate in the interpreters you work with?
Well, I think actually this fascination of interpretation and how a performer is on the stage stems from my own performance anxiety. I think that I'm fascinated with how people look on the stage, because I would just find myself observing and observing again and observing again to these small minutiae of a performance. And I wanted to capture that now in closer detail so that we could appreciate even more as an audience, these tiny gestures that people have, the way their eyes look, the way their face looks, the way all of this movement is, and really capture it in a quite more artistic fashion. And I like to work with people, to get back to your question, I like to work with people who I find extremely unique in this fashion. So I find you, for instance, an extremely unique performer, and because of that, and because of the fascination with whatever causes the uniqueness of a particular person, or this, maybe it's because, for instance, you have other interests like mathematics, or you have developed your own way of dealing with your particular profession, I find that in and of itself to be a fascination of how not explicitly exploring authenticity in a person and how that's presented on the stage. But to get to this point where it's not just the characterization of a musical performance, but you get to the real authentic person behind the performance. And I think then that's my particular fascination as a composer. It's exquisitely personal for every musician. Maybe too much so, because I find myself working so closely with musicians that it's almost impossible for another musician to pick up the piece or the score. because of the unique quality that I try to encapsulate for every particular musician or I'm working with. And that might be the downside of this as a focus as a composer. But the upside is, I think, is this exploration and making true documentations of musicians, where it becomes a permanent established thing that can be presented then in installation form or other types of formats that preserve the uniqueness of the performer in a very, I think, in a very loving way, you know, to actually cherish the performance, cherish the virtuosity of the person, and to try to preserve that, because it's a fleeting moment in history, and I'm really fascinated by these fleeting moments and this impermanence of the field that we have, and trying to encapsulate that and capture that.
Wow. And I can only say with working for you for such a long time that you're very you're clear, but you're also gentle, or you have a nice way in bringing things out of me, and how you challenge me, and that is very nice also for performer to be seen. Yes, I like to be challenged, but not like in a way like over challenged, or that you're not the kind of person that whatever you would try to control me or be rude or something, and then I might not be able to open up that much. And that is so nice to be seen also, like, as a singer with the voice I have, because this is the voice I have, you know. It's not like I could play on another piano and maybe the sound is different. I mean, people either like my voice or they don't like it. There's nothing I can do. I cannot change my instrument. And so whenever somebody really likes it and says, this is what I want to go with, and not try to, in a way, maybe manipulate my voice or so, that's also nice for me, because this is just how I'm born.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
And I also enjoyed it when you, I think you started out with some other people, with Sarah Saviet, when you started filming people you work with. And then you also approached me because I sang Kododama, which is a great solo piece. And before we just did, no, not everything was regular. We did Decalogue, which was a piece for a little ensemble with me and organ for Guardini Stiftung. And then we did this piece, which was a piece, but also within an installation in the Nikolaikirche with Michael Weilacher. But they were still, no, I mean, the thing with installation was already very artsy. And I mean, everything with Guardini is also more than just music. But I still felt it was a different step when you then approached me, Irene, I would like to film you. And you also said to me, I want to get really close to you and, you know, film your face. And that's something that's, especially for singers, a little bit frightening, because we know that maybe sometimes, I don't know, getting a high note or so, maybe we don't look as beautiful as we think we should. And so that was also very a vulnerable context to start out with you with this movie we did, which anyone can see on YouTube. Do you want to say something about Kododama?
Well, I would
or
rather
this process
say,
in filming musicians very,
I would
very
rather
closely.
Talk about this vulnerability which you speak of, which I think is very, it's fascinating. So we're always trying to cover up our vulnerabilities in order to seek for this sheen of professionality. And I think that what is so beautiful about our human aspects are precisely these vulnerabilities that we all have, and trying to capture that vulnerability, and of course with the inherent trust. And so what I've really appreciated about you as a performer is that you inherently have trusted me in order to film you in these various situations. And I've also, for our new project Embodiment, obviously filmed you in some very vulnerable aspects, and you've trusted me to make sure that the material is will represent you in a good way, in a way that enhances you as a musician, and the trust that you your vulnerability is presented in a way that where you see the beauty behind it, and it's not it doesn't look in an unprofessional way, and it doesn't look in a sloppy or a haphazard way. And so I think that's one of the points in this very intimate process that I like to explore this, particularly because we're all vulnerable and really vulnerable when we get on the stage. And how do you push beyond that point of vulnerability into becoming a hero, becoming a someone who presents himself on a stage in front of thousands of people to do this and to actually command an entire room like that. And I find that process to be extremely fascinating. So yes, and with the filming, it's a part of trying to capture something very intimate to be presented in a larger format that many people. So for instance, I had some pieces that we collaborated on presented at the Regensburger Film Festival and larger film festivals in which they would be screened by many, many, many more people than even would be possible in our small field of new music. So that is what is so great about it. And also, I think that why I want to do these pieces in this fashion is precisely because of this. I find that we're in a very small field and in a very small setting where we are not able to garner a lot of attention from other fields, so in the visual arts and from other media. And I feel that working in this way shines a light on this very precious field of experimental and contemporary new music, which I have a love of. And in order to obtain support and to keep the profession going, because it's very vulnerable now in this day and age with the funding cuts and so forth, I feel that there has to be an impetus to allow other people into this very very complicated field of music, so that they're able to understand and connect to it in a fashion that is makes it attractive. And part of that's also a part of the impetus. It's not just a pragmatic thing. It's something that I discovered after my initial interest that, oh, this actually is interesting for visual artists, and some people who know absolutely nothing about new music are now interested in new music because they are attracted to the films. And that's one discovery that I find it very easy these days to have something put in an art gallery. I've been getting a lot of interest because, and as we had the installations in Venice and Rome, and also in Berlin, the minute I contact a gallerist, they seem extremely interested. So I find that to be a very positive feedback, and because normally, you know, there just is in general an idea that new music is not compatible with the everyday public and that they can't understand it. And I agree to that at some point. I don't think that the everyday public should necessarily understand all of the complicated details in a score. But I do think that the everyday public can appreciate something that is more multimedia, and they can at least appreciate it on a different level. So I sorry I talked so long. I can't remember the initial question.
No, we started out with Kududama, but I can also wrap up some things, because how our journey then continued. We started out with Kududama, and then we had those weird times all over the world with this virus. And then I had the opportunity to use, I think, two of my stipends, scholarships I got, to do two more movies with you, or two more films. One was then You Eat Too Much? No, the title is different.
You Are What You Eat. No.
You Are What You Eat, which is, it's, I find there is also a lot of humor in it you also have, and it's, I think it's stunning. And we also had this now at those exhibitions you just mentioned, and we also did this piece, I'm bad with the titles right now, the one I did with Martin Wistinghausen, The Keen,
oh, the Keen Illimitable Secret of Begin.
Super, thank you. Yeah. And so those were like the things that were kind of born out of the situation we had in on the world, and then it just yeah, we were just lucky to take it to the next level, which then was to get movies or films into those film festivals you just mentioned. I'm like, wow, some totally other people are watching and listening to our stuff. And then this year we got it into those exhibitions, and I'm sure we're gonna get some more. I want that, and I like it that we're can go everywhere somehow. And then this other thing, which it's probably the main topic for today, what we're talking about, is that we also got this commission by Rainy Days Festival Luxembourg for our great collaboration in embodiment. This is no, I'm back with titles today. You will correct me. And but the thing is that the next level is now, okay, we did performance, we did movie or film, and now we're gonna do film plus live performance. There is also a musician within the, I'm in the movie, and Michael Weilacher is in there, or Michael. And this is so exciting that we now get this opportunity to really grow. And also when I look back, it's so fascinating how everything grew. And just because I met you in Berlin and we talked and we went to this Vietnamese restaurant and now we're sitting here and doing all those great things. So this is kind of the summary where we are at, and you just say whatever you want.
I just want to mention that there are some other films going on well as well before I go into embodiment with Eric Hubner, who's who plays with the New York Phil in the United States, and he's also very pleased with the video work that I did with him. And I went to the US to film him, and it was a really great collaboration. And also with Nathan Planta, who's presenting Double Trouble in Austria, and has been presented at Potsdam. And so I've been working this way with a lot of musicians, as you well mentioned, Sarah Saviette and Michael. And with embodiment, this is a different level of film that I have than what I've done. It's more narrative. It's almost like a movie. And I had filmed you and Michael in different situations that were non-musical situations as well, and with costumes and so forth. So I decided to take it a different level. So not just to have the musical aspects, but also have some more character development within a film setting. But you will be singing as a live soprano and acting out, and there will be an interactive film with you. And Michael Weilacher, who's an amazing percussionist, also my husband, will be presented purely in video format as a figure that both references this idea of digital presence, but it also represents this idea of the, I guess, the spiritual universe, where there's you could take the video to be any element in a way, because it's supposed to, it, in a lot of ways, will represent the unconscious subtext of the drama, and also hopefully associate and free associate in a lot of different ways to your actions on the stage, the deeper to provoke deeper emotional responses in the audience. It's a piece that is references a lot of mythology, and is a little bit surprising, because in the body of my work I haven't really worked in this fashion before. But I decided for this video drama that I referenced a lot from Joseph Campbell and this A Hero with a Thousand Faces, in order to have who was actually the basis for George Lucas's Star Wars trilogy. So he's influenced a lot of different creative people from the popular world to the non-popular world. And so Campbell has his work is really seminal and has created sort of a basis in the 20th century for a lot of different artists. And I decided to go back in a way to these texts, and I found just so much amazing material that I was heavily inspired by this to finally delve into simply human mythology.
Yeah, I enjoy already our process. I mean, this is the, as we said, the biggest project and also the most time consuming. I mean, we're working over a year or kind of like that on this. And I have been to Berlin quite a bit because you have to film me, you have to see me, and we talk it through. And then, well, certainly some things I can also practice here, but now we need to bring the pieces together. And I'm very, very excited, and we are very thankful that we get to do it in Luxembourg at Rainy Days. And thanks also to Catherine Combs, who is the artistic director of this festival. And so, yeah, I'm really excited. And as you said, there were some challenging parts in the filming, but I totally trusted you, but I'm not gonna give anything away. People should just come and see and watch it. And but you also made me comfortable because you are very gentle and generous in this process. The other thing I wanted to bring out or maybe ask you here officially is that I think you also have a very good sense for writing for voice, and I always enjoy it, and it is
Oh, thank
fun,
you.
and I find more now since I'm practicing it more shades and emotions and anything in it. And what how do you get it done so well? I think you also really try it out. You sing it yourself, or how do you get so into me that I have fun with it?
That's a mystery. I mean, obviously, I have a serious imagination as a composer, and I for the voice, I think it's comes a bit naturally because I too can use my voice on a lot of different levels. And not that I would I'm a singer on by any means, but I can at least try things at home. And for me, I it's a little bit of a mystery for me as well, that I can write for voice so well, and I'm very thankful that you have interpreted so many of my works. It's such a pleasure to work with you, and I'm so grateful in a way for the collaborations, which have really enhanced my writing for voice. I mean, it could be that throughout the years I've become a much better vocal composer because we've done so many collaborations. And you know, it's great that also that you point out, you know, a mistake in my score, or we can work back and forth where you say, you know, I get a little bit of a lesson from you. And so I think that's improved my writing for voice as well. Because I really appreciate it actually when a musician just stands up to a composer and says, this does not work out. You know, or this, you could have written this a better way or so forth. I find it a little bit of a lost art in the field. I find that there's so many different collaborations these days where musicians just sort of perform the piece and get through it, and they don't really have this time to in a very in a trust relationship where they can say something where they feel like it's okay to say something and there won't be any backlash from it. And so I think because of that, I've become a much better composer before writing for voice because of you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're doing really, really well, and I'm excited. If we might also talk about some other things, but maybe all the listeners already will feel it. I mean, this is the gift, and we also didn't know when we met in 2014 that this would be our common journey. When you really have the privilege to work with someone so long, because you can dig deeper, and that's just something. You need time and you need experience. It does not just fall from heaven. I mean, there is something that got us interested, and so I'm very, very thankful. Is there anything you would like to add to our project in Luxembourg Embodiment?
Well, yes, I think what I have to add is that there will be some audience participation, and I think it will also be very humorous. So I'm trying to really work in a way for this particular piece that there's a complete connect between the audience and the performance, and I think that this is really important right now, and not to degrade the quality or the artistic level that I'm working on, but to create a piece that has that quality and artistic level, but that also opens up the playing field so that the audience member can feel as if they've had an experience that they will remember, that doesn't just blow past in the myriad of information that's being given to them and the myriad of things that they experience now through digital media, that the memory of this particular piece will stay with them. So I'm creating it on a certain level with that, and looking within myself of what experiences have I had as a person where I really, when I go to an art gallery, when I go to a concert, that I really remember that piece, whether for better or worse, I remembered that piece. So I'm trying to really make it an extremely memorable experience for the audience. And I guess that involves some participation as well from the audience level. But of course, I'm still in the middle of writing the piece and working on the video right now, and so hopefully it will all come together to have that desired effect.
I'm excited. I'm part of this process. And so if we now go a little bit more to you as a person, how do you get all those things done? I mean, you're teaching at the UdK, you're composing, you're now composing and filming and producing Embodiment. And how do you structure your day, or
Let's not
how do
forget
you
my
get this done?
6-year-old son,
Yes.
it is another job to have, to be a mother, and I'm also teaching at Stanford University in the overseas program. So that is also another thing. Well, I don't necessarily feel as if my schedule, sometimes it can't be so strict because I have a 6-year-old, and sometimes my 6-year-old is sick and has to stay home from school, and he just started first grade, so before he was in kindergarten, and so my schedule was, I honestly, a bit wild before. But I've had the help. Michael, is my husband, is an incredible help with him so that I can get my work done and still remain focused on what matters in my career. But in terms of daily scheduling, I like to start off with a bit of meditation. I like to then start off in segments. So breaking everything up in 45-minute segments, taking a quick break, and allowing myself to switch from item to item. If I find I'm having a day where I'm not so concentrated, that I feel like I've gotten something done on every single project or that I'm working on, and yet, so but sometimes, like yesterday, I ended up working 3 hours on the video, unbeknownst to me. It wasn't really what I was supposed to be doing, so I didn't, as you might have noticed, get to my emailing. So there is, there's also, I like to allow that if I'm having a day where I'm extremely inspired, to allow that process to completely play out. So, but of course, that requires the luxury of time, and
But
that
you're
has to.
obviously also good in switching back and between different areas or tasks.
I like to think that I'm good at it, and I do. I don't. I've given up on being perfect in everything, and in order to be able to do everything that I would like to be doing. So, you know, I love my work at the UDK with this ensemble, and. But I also love teaching at Stanford. I love having contact with Americans who were from totally different fields, a lot of them in the tech field. So I get like a lot of information, and I feel as if that's a very important position to have, because if I inspire any one of them to want to support new music or support concert going, and in the future when they become loaded tech billionaires, then I've done some good, and well, at least in California, right? But I feel that it's a that's also an interesting part of what I'm doing at Stanford. But I love composing, so I don't want to give that up. I love to be active, because I feel that it gives a feeling of meaningfulness. So without that meaningfulness, then I would obviously not feel good about life in general. So I think it's all about finding meaningfulness, and then pursuing meaningfulness. What is meaningful for me personally is art, music, and creating an impact, like with the ensemble that I developed at the UDK. Now it is a permanent ensemble. The president of the university installed it as a permanent ensemble, where it was before there was nothing available there really as a part of the system. So it felt it what feels really meaningful is that I made a significant change in at least the university system there at the UDK, where there's an ensemble for new music. They and now even the students are required to perform a piece of new music within their study, something that was not a requirement before. So I feel like I transformed that system, and in a city where I am a foreigner, because the feeling of meaningfulness becomes more important when you're coming in from a system from the outside. And because it's not my inherent culture, but I want to contribute to it because I receive so much from it. So, and then the personal meaningfulness of making a creation and having a great collaboration, and then seeing that creation on the stage, and then having an audience member come up to me and say, "Wow, that really inspired me," or "That really blew my mind," or is for me what I find to be the most important part of creation personally.
And what does it mean for you to be true to yourself or authentic in this music business? And how do you keep true to yourself?
Well, it's not really, for me, it's not really a business that you can sell out with, because there's not a lot of money in the field. So I don't really worry so much about being true to myself, because I wouldn't have chosen the field had I not been true to myself, because it's obviously a hard profession. And so I don't really think about it so much, to be honest, about how to maintain authenticity. I think in order to So it's not really a question I ask myself so much. How do I personally remain authentic? But I do think about more the aspects of how can I communicate in a way that creates an impact. And that is a part of something that's an authentic wish.
Well, I enjoy talking to you as always. Now this time on air, everybody can hear us. And we are at the last question. And the last question I have for you is, which tip would you like to give young artists?
I think to simply ignore what the world is telling them and to do exactly what they want to do.
Well, I thank you so much. Leah Muir, thank you that you have been a guest in my podcast today.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation, Irena, and once again for our over 10-year collaboration together and for all of the wonderful opportunities that we've had and for hoping for more in the future. Thank you so much.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.